Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here. As always, request for you today. We are really close to being up to 4.5 rating on Apple Podcasts. If you are an Apple Podcast subscriber and can get that five-star rating in there to get us up to 4.5, we would greatly appreciate that. So thank you so much for your time in advance. But today we are going to be going over our second part of a three-part series. Yesterday, we went over how Green Bay can achieve a Super Bowl this upcoming season. What needs to go right in order for them to get to the promised land? Today, I'll be honest, is a little bit less fun. That's the fun one yesterday that we get to see how they could win a Super Bowl. Today is what would go wrong to see them get to the point where they don't even make the playoffs or they regress in 2025. Now, we're clearly, obviously, hoping none of these come to fruition. And we clearly, obviously, want the Packers to show those signs of progression, get better, and make a run this upcoming season. But just like we can kind of take our look at what needs to go right in order for them to get there, what we can also look at is what Green Bay needs to avoid to do or avoid doing to make sure that they're not taking that step back this upcoming season with not being a worse team and somehow not making the playoffs this upcoming year. Now, to be totally fair, all right, there is a piece of this where you could just take yesterday's episode and say, hey, that one, just flip it, do the opposite. All right, whatever the opposite of what yesterday's episode is of what they could do to win the Super Bowl, if they do the opposite of that, they're going to be a very bad team. And there is absolutely some level of truth to that. And in full transparency, there will be a couple of those things that we flip on their head and say, hey, if these things go wrong, it clearly is going to make for a very long season. So that is fair, but I do want to bring some other things to attention in today's show. So I promise you it'll not just be the opposite of yesterday's episode. But we will start with one that is a little bit of the opposite of yesterday's episode, and that is regression and or stagnation. But I want to add the piece here that for really, again, the second consecutive season, as mentioned yesterday, we all had high hopes and aspirations for the 2024 team. And let's be blatantly clear here. This was not some unbelievably terrible team in 2024, not some team that took this giant step back and it's like, oh my goodness. Imagine, just remember in 2023 where we felt they were going to be this awesome team and then 2024 came and now they're terrible. No, they took a small step back. You know, the win percentage was pretty much the same, but they got to the playoffs. They lost their final three on the year. They lost their playoff game and it just ended with a bitter taste in the mouth. And for that reason, it definitely felt like a step back. And just not, again, winning a playoff game in 23, not winning one in 2024, it definitely felt like a step back. But the team as a total, or even their record or anything like that, in and of itself, I'm not even necessarily talking about that from what we saw in 2024, but it was a bunch of players that we've seen perform well that took a big step back, or a lot of them who stagnated in 2024. We did not see a ton of progress from players this past year. And I do think there was a different episode I was considering doing, which is a lot of what we're going to talk about today, but is like, what are the scaries for this upcoming season? What would really give you a real legitimate, like, oh my God, if this happened, we're in deep crap sort of thought. And I really truly believe that the first thing that came to my mind for that and why we're talking about it number one on this list is, what if this is just a coaching staff slash team that cannot take these young talented players and get them to the next level? Or worse, they're coming in as good players and they're getting worse. What if we see another year where 10 players take a step back, maybe one or two players take a small step forward, and the rest of the team stagnates? There will be absolute legitimate concern of like, all right, where do we go from here? If the players on this team take a legit step back again, there has to be a real legitimate concern of what you can do with this overall roster the way that it is. You're probably not, unless it's like a 4-13 season or anything like that, going aggressively to be like, all right, it's done. We're nuking the staff and we're going in a different direction. I don't think it's going to get to that point, but it probably does put a really heavy burden on this coaching staff in 2026 to show that there can be real legitimate signs of progress. Because if there's not, we're too far gone in a bad direction. Now, I don't believe that that's going to happen. I don't think we're going to see a step back from the players. I don't think we're going to see a step back from the team. I want to be clear on that. That's definitely not the direction that I see this heading in. But you also just can't ignore it entirely either. You can't just say, that was last year. This year will be different. Based on what? Based on what? Vibes? Hopes? And I think if you're being a bit more cynical, and I know that there are the Matt LaFleur haters or the don't believe in this coaching staff or whatever, that's what they would point to. They would say, hey, this team hasn't made enough signs of progress. I think that's a little bit harsh. I think it's definitely harsh on Matt considering where the team was before he took over and then what he has done since taking over. I think that would definitely be an unfair assessment in totality. But if they did take a step back, and we're talking about, again, in this episode, we're talking about a team that doesn't make the playoffs. And if they're not going to make the playoffs, it's probably due to some other things we could talk about coming up here in a moment, but in large part, probably due to some players not taking the jumps that we are hoping that they can make. And again, if we see real solid regression, I personally will have some real questions, some questions that I think are going to have to get answered either before 2026 or at minimum during 2026, because I think to me, that's really the worst case scenario here. Is if you see this young, exciting team full of young players that have all this opportunity ahead of them, and 2023 already was like a proof of concept of like what they could become, and then you see a step back in 24 and a step back in 25, that will cause, I think, some real concern. And like I said, a lot of questions moving forward. And would probably be an indicator as to why Green Bay did not make the playoffs this upcoming season. That happens. My guess is regression probably played, or at least stagnation played, a pretty significant part in that. Number two, I think, is a fair one to bring up. It's also an impossibility to know at the same time. On paper, right now, this looks like a pretty brutal schedule. And we've talked about it not only for Green Bay, but the entirety of the NFC North. First and foremost, the North in and of itself looks like a very difficult division, but Green Bay gets the AFC North. Cleveland is an easier team within that, but Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, especially with Rodgers in that game, Baltimore, going to be very difficult games, right? You play the NFC East, you get Philly again. Dallas won't be easy, especially in Dallas. Washington's not going to be easy. The Giants would hopefully be easier, but you get them on the road as well. You go through this, and on paper right now, Detroit looks like an extremely difficult game week one, followed by Washington in week two. Feel pretty good about Cleveland in week three. Then you go to Dallas in week four. That's a very difficult Dallas team in Dallas. Then you get a bye week. Cincinnati looks like a good team. Arizona in Arizona will be better. Pittsburgh with Rodgers, you know, is going to give them everything with Rodgers wanting to get that win against Green Bay. Carolina in Green Bay looks a little bit easier. Then you go Philly, which is in Green Bay, which is a very difficult game. At New York, which has actually been the Giants, have, for some reason, in the LaFleur era, even when they've been awful, have been a bit of a kryptonite for Green Bay for whatever reason. Minnesota, Detroit, Chicago, we know we're going to get the best punch from all three of those teams. At Denver, at Chicago, Baltimore, at Minnesota, that is a brutal schedule. Now, at this point last year, we looked at San Francisco and Miami in the middle of the 2024 schedule. When you looked at, you know, November 24th against San Francisco and November 28th on a Thursday against Miami, followed by, you know, Detroit on the road in Detroit, you looked at those three games, you're like, oh my God, They're going to have San Fran, Miami, and Detroit back to back to back. Well, the truth of the matter was San Francisco was so beat up. They were a terrible team by that point. Miami no-showed that game for the most part and was not in a great situation. And then you also have a situation where Detroit was a very difficult team, and they were actually as expected, right? So two of the three were not hard at all. The other one actually was. And you just, again, it just goes to show you don't know exactly what these teams are going to look like. We could get to the middle of 2025 and you could have a couple of those teams that, you know, you think are going to be brutal, and they're just so beat up that they're just cakewalks. So on paper, this looks like a very difficult schedule. And if it's as advertised, just that in and of itself, meaning Green Bay stays the same. Everything that they were good at in 2024 is the same. Everything they were bad at in 2024 stays the same. They're a team that looks like they did in 23 and 24, a playoff contending team, but they just have a much harder schedule. That in and of itself could push them from 11-6 to 10-7 or 9-8. And if they're at 9-8, that maybe gets them out of the playoffs. So that could be another reason why Green Bay takes a little bit of a step back this upcoming year. Number three, I talked about this with Paul Farrington on the Paul Farrington Show and the whole group of guys when I was over on their show. I did them a favor. I said, you know, obviously I spoke very highly of Green Bay through the entire episode, but I said, hey, if you're Vikings fans and you want some reason why Green Bay may not be as good in 2025, or a reason just to be, you know, annoying Vikings fans, basically, I said, here's something I will tell you. One of the fears that I have from 2024 is that they were a bad team merchant, meaning they played well against really crappy teams. I even think that you can, for an extent, go back to 2023 with this also. It's not in its entirety, but take from the last three games of 2023, especially at Carolina, a god-awful team in 2023. At Minnesota, they had their backup quarterback in that game. Green Bay won 33-10. They were terrible. Chicago in week 18, god-awful team in 2023. Even Dallas, they were great up until that point, but they looked brutal in that game, and then that carried over into 2025. That might be a little bit unfair, but we kind of saw in 2025 that Dallas, the playoff team, wasn't really real. We saw them kind of fall apart in totality in 2024. So you could argue Carolina, Minnesota, Chicago, and Dallas at the end of 2023. Then Indianapolis, Tennessee, LA without Cup and Nacua, and when they weren't playing good football yet, Arizona, Jacksonville, Chicago, San Fran with their entire team obliterated, Miami on Thanksgiving, Seattle with Sam Howell, New Orleans with Spencer Rattler. All of those are their wins. None of them are impressive. The only one that I didn't mention in there was a 2-point win on October 20th in 2024 against the Houston Texans. From the last four wins of 2023 and all of their wins last year in 2024, the two real solid wins that you could kind of point to are the Texans at home and Dallas in the playoff game. I think those are two good wins no matter which way you slice it. Outside of that, you beat a bunch of nobodies. And as we just talked about on the strength of schedule, it is not a schedule of nobodies, at least on paper right now, in 2025. And it goes back to what we talked about yesterday and what Goody started offseason with, is like, this team needs to get better. There needs to be a level of urgency. I think this is going to be a very difficult season from a game in and game out challenge standpoint of what teams are playing. They're going to get a really good puncher shot every single week from the opposing team. Like, there's just not many easy outs. Hopefully Cleveland, Carolina, maybe New York. And I'm sure you get a couple other teams that are just on bad stretches or get some bad injury luck or whatever. There's going to be a handful of games here or there that you might be able to take advantage of. And I'm sure, again, some of these teams maybe just won't be as hard as advertised, but I think you're going to get a very difficult schedule in totality. And if Green Bay is just a bad team merchant and they can't win good team against good teams, this could be a 6 or 7 win team. So they have to be better against good teams, and they can't just mop up against bad teams. They need to continue. Like, they really, really need to beat up on their bad teams this year, because they don't have many of them. Like, you really need to go this year in 2025 against Cleveland. I'll even put Arizona in there, Carolina, New York. Yeah, like, that kind of is it. Like, in those four games, you really need to go 4-0. Because, again, you just don't have any other cakewalky sort of games on your schedule. So Cleveland, Arizona, Carolina, New York. And the tough part about that is, even within those four quote-unquote easier games, three of them are on the road. Just a very difficult schedule. Green Bay has not been good against good teams, and that's going to have to change this upcoming year, or we could see a real legitimate regression this upcoming year. We'll be right back. Hey friends, it's officially the All-Star break, which means it's time to get ready for an epic second half of the baseball season on Prize Picks. And as always, Prize Picks is going all out just like they do during football season, and have the best promos, prizes, and selections. And there's never been a better time to get in on all the action and to start winning real money. Now, right now, you can sign up on Prize Picks and get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. You don't even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is absolutely guaranteed. So if you think Milwaukee's going to stay hot after the All-Star break, if you think Andrew Vaughn's going to continue to impress, then it's time to cook up your hot takes with your friends and win real money this baseball season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Now, I know I'm going to come out firing in the second half with some big-time selections on Shohei Ohtani, Jazz Chisholm, Christian Yelich, and All-Star snub Christopher Sanchez. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app, using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly on your first $5 lineup. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Run your game. Number four, I love the man in totality so far. Everything about him. The scheme, the versatility, the press conferences, the coaching along the sidelines. Every single thing about Jeff Hafley, I am enamored with. I think he's a stud. I think he should be a head coach in 2026. I'm not hoping that's the case, because I'd love to see him stay in Green Bay, but that's how much I think of Jeff Hafley. But Jeff Hafley has only so much smoke and only so many mirrors to be able to mask what were some real deficiencies with the Packers roster in 2024. If they can't pass rush better, if the cornerback group doesn't take a step or just is fine or worse, I still expect Jeff Hafley to pull some stuff out that's like, I don't know how they ended up being the 12th best defense when they can't get to the quarterback and their coverage group isn't as good as I expected. And maybe Quay Walker was a little bit more up and down than I would have liked. And like, I'm looking at all of this and I'm like, this roster on defense is just not what I was hoping. Yet somehow they're 12th. Like, I still think they might be 12th or 14th just based on Jeff Hafley. But at some point, man, teams are going to catch up with you. Scheme and system and coaching can only get you so far. The players on the field have to go out and execute. And the truth is that there are some very bright offensive minds that are out there as well. And at some point, you might just get to a stalemate. Even if Hafley calls an unbelievable game defensively, you might run into some offensive minds that call unbelievable games offensively. And if your guys just can't go out there and execute, there's only so much that you can do. It doesn't matter what play you call. If you're going to call a play that is designed around covering and getting there with four, and your guys can't get there with four, good luck. If you're going to call a blitz and your guys can't cover on the back end, good luck. Like, you cannot just get there with scotch tape and, you know, some stitching here and there. It's going to take the performance of the players on the field. So I love Jeff Hafley. I don't expect there to be a regression, because now there's tape of Jeff Hafley's defense. He'll evolve before you get any beat on him. I truly believe that. But even if Hafley's on his A game, even if he is a step ahead of everyone else, the players on the field still have to go out and execute. And if the pass rush isn't good enough, the coverage on the back end isn't good enough, and the players just don't develop, there's, again, just not enough smoke and mirrors to kind of get through that. And you could see this defense take a real step back this upcoming year. Number five, I was pretty blown away, and this kind of, I think, goes back to Hafley and his expectations that he set, but I was pretty blown away with the improvement in the run defense in 2024. I still, even though I've brought it up on numerous occasions, I still don't think we talk about enough how much the run defense improved. And I think what was most impressive about that is, for the most part, your front seven was the same. It was Clark. It was TJ Slayton. It was Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, you know, Devontae Wyatt, LVN, Rashawn Gary, Preston Smith at the beginning of the year. You know, like all those guys were basically the same. Quay Walker. The only change in the front seven was really Edgerrin Cooper. And even at the beginning of the year, they were playing well against the run, and Cooper was basically not even playing yet at that point. So he took the same guys that Joe Barry had and said, we're going to stop the run now. I thought that was really impressive. I do have some concern of, like, my guess, my hypothesis is that they put a ton of time, effort, energy, and focus into, we're going to be a good run defense team. And if even that just cuts back a little bit and you start working on pass rush or different, whatever, anything else might be, if the focus isn't quite as great and they maybe just take it a little bit more for granted, I'm not saying even the coaching staff, I'm even saying the players here, where they just expect that to have the same level of success in 2025, I could see that taking a step back. I also think TJ Slayton not being there matters as well. They don't have that guy. Now, maybe a Nasir Stackhouse can end up being that. I think that's a stretch for him in year one, but they don't have that big time, you know, 330-pound run stuffer in there at the moment. And that gives me a little bit of concern as well. So if this run defense takes a step back, one of the reasons the defense was so much better, even remember going back to Joe Barry, they were good on obvious passing downs. They just could never get into obvious passing downs. So Jeff Hafley found a way to get them into obvious passing downs and like third and longs, and then they were great again. But if this team regresses from a run defense standpoint and can't get the opposing team in third and long, then I think you will see this defense regress in totality. And even the smoke and mirrors that Jeff Hafley has and the wizardry that he can perform becomes less and less because it's third and one. So again, they're going to have to eat their vegetables on early downs again. It's going to have to maintain a major focus within this team. And guys like Wyatt, Wooden, Brooks, Clark on the interior are going to have to be even better with no TJ Slayton there to be kind of that run stuffer on early downs. Number six, still too much youth and inexperience. I think this is less of a concern. In fact, of all 12 of these, it probably is maybe the weakest or just the one that I don't have a ton of fear of at the moment. But it is still a young team. They added an Aaron Banks. They added a Nate Hobbs. Neither are old, veteran, you know, grizzled type guys. You know, everyone's a year older, other than the rookies. And, you know, they still have Josh Jacobs, Xavier McKinney, Love's now in year six. Like, they have enough veterans on this team where it's not something that I'm super concerned about. Also, this is a young team that does have two playoff runs in them. Now, they're 1-2 in those two playoff runs. They won against Dallas, lost against San Fran, and then lost against Philly this past year. But that is still experience in playoff football nonetheless, and I do think that will still serve them well. But they are still young. They are still a team that's trying to figure out their identity. And if they can't, if they remain young and inexperienced and don't take those steps to be the team that we think they can be, well, then it's going to be a problem. So I have less concern about this one, but it is noteworthy that they're, my guess is they're going to at least be in the top five youngest team. I don't think they'll be the youngest team again in football, but it could still be in the conversation. And I bet they're still in the top five youngest teams in football would be my guess. Number seven is they are just a pedestrian pass defense. And this kind of goes back to pass rush and the corners in the secondary. You're banking a lot at corner on Keyshawn Nixon, Carrington Valentine, Nate Hobbs. You're banking a lot on the pass rush on the guys that have been here. Rashawn Gary, LVN, Devontae Wyatt, Kenny Clark, Carl Brooks, Colby Wooden, Kingsley Enagbare, Brenton Cox. You have added, basically, I'll maybe give you four players to the, actually, I'm going to say three. I was going to say Brinson as well, but Brinson's not going to be a pass rusher. So maybe three players to the pass defense group, right? The pass rushers or the corners. Those three players are fourth round pick Baron Sorrell, fifth round pick Colin Oliver, and free agent Nate Hobbs. Your pass defense was pretty successful in large part due to, I think, again, what Jeff Hafley was able to accomplish. You move on from Eric Stokes, who was my lowest graded player on the team. You lose Jaire Alexander, who only played 300 snaps, but after the Philly game, those were about 250 really good snaps. And you didn't, again, add anything of major consequence, again, depending on what Nate Hobbs can be and if they get anything out of Oliver and Sorrell. I'll say one more time, you're basically banking on your group of Valentine, Nixon, LVN, Gary, Clark, Wyatt, primarily, to be the group that makes this pass defense ultra successful. I suppose it's worth noting as well that guys like Xavier McKinney, Edgerrin Cooper, Quay Walker, Evan Williams, those guys will play a part in pass defense as well. But I'm specifically talking about corner and pass rusher here. And if Nixon and Valentine are just who they are, and this pass rush doesn't take any step forward, well, we know that result already. And they really left corner untouched in the draft. They didn't go out and feel the need to get a Trey Hendrickson or some big time pass rusher or go spend a first, second, third round pick on defensive end or defensive tackle at a pass rush standpoint. And if that doesn't work out, if they took the philosophy of like, hey, we already bought our ingredients, now it's time to go out and cook with these guys, but the ingredients just weren't as good as you expected. Again, Jeff Hafley's going to have a tough time with that. So pedestrian pass defense would give me some real cause for concern of how they could potentially take a step back this year. Number eight is just a all-time Green Bay classic special teams performance. Good old 29th, 30th, 31st, 32nd in the league when it comes to special teams. This would be disappointing. What seems like on paper, you've got your kicker. Still have a lot of faith in Daniel Whalen, even if I think he was a bit disappointing in 2024, at least in the second half of the year. You're bringing back your long snapper. You bring in a couple guys like specifically Isaiah Simmons. I think they have some pieces both on the coverage units and on the return units that have the ability to make this a much better group. I'm excited about the kick return options this team has, whether they go with a Keyshawn Nixon or even somebody like a Savion Williams and Marshawn Lloyd. I think there's Mecole Hardman. I think there's a variety of different options. If Mecole Hardman does make the team, I think he's been the best punt returner that they've had in some time. Long story short, there's zero reason why this shouldn't be a good, sound, solid special teams. Notice, I'm not saying a top five, a top 10, a top 15 special teams. I'm just saying solid, fine, good, not terrible. So to me, that cannot happen. And if this is a very classic 28th or lower special teams unit again, it just puts pressure on everything else. You're at a field position disadvantage. You're not making your field goals. You're punting poorly. You've probably had some missed fumbles or muff punts or whatever the case may be. It can't happen. Just cannot happen. We're done with it. We're over it. Has to be a solid special teams group this year. And quite frankly, without trying to sound too harsh about it, Rich Bisaccia's job absolutely should depend on that. And I'm cheering for him. I like the guy. I want him to do well. I probably would not have got rid of him for this past year. But the question should have been there. And not only did they not get rid of him, they extended him and gave him a raise. So it's time. You better be better in special teams. And if not, it could be a real reason why Green Bay just isn't the team that we want them to be. We'll be right back. Number nine, one of the things that Tom Brady called out, and at the time I thought it was a little bit harsh, and the more that I thought about it and went back and kind of watched, I think he was right, was the attention of detail on the Packers offense. Now, this all goes with stuff that we've talked about with rhythm and timing and those sort of things, right? I don't think that Green Bay in their pass offense ever got into rhythm this past year. I think with Love missing time in training camp, it wasn't much, but training camp due to the contract situation, I think with all the injuries starting in week one, just all of that stuff, some of the receivers getting hurt, Dobbs with the suspension stuff, they never got in a rhythm. Transitioning to the Josh Jacobs offense, all of it. That to me left them in a situation where, unlike the end of 2023, where it felt like they were constantly in rhythm and everyone was always where they were supposed to be and they were literally always making plays, in 2024, it just felt like the opposite. Just felt like everything was clunky. And it felt like that attention to detail, the the route depth, you know, love knowing where his receivers were going to be, just didn't feel complete. And I think, again, that was due to the lack of practice time together. But if that just carries over, we see an offense that is lacking in detail and doesn't have the precision that it needs, good luck being a top offense. And if they can't put up the points that they need to put up, yeah, that's a way that you could take a step back this year. I thought Brady was right in 2024 to call them out for their attention to detail and their lack of rhythm on offense. That cannot be something that carries over into this season. Number 10, again, it's kind of like yesterday. We're not going to spend a ton of time on this one. It goes without saying to some extent, but it also deserves to be on the list. You know, too many key injuries could clearly knock this team down. Now, it would be tough. You know, hopefully Jordan Love is just healthier this year, and that will almost inherently make it at least equal or better than what it was last year. But if they have bad injury luck, they could be either that team that's snake bitten or just get caught at the wrong positions with not the right players in. And that stuff can just kill you. So too many bad injuries to key players will definitely knock them down and could be a reason why they don't make the playoffs this year. Number 11 is lack of impact from their rookie class. Listen, this is a pretty, kind of draft and develop type draft once again from Green Bay. Now, not in totality, right? Matthew Golden is expected to come in and be somebody who can play right away. My guess is that Baron Sorrell and or Colin Oliver will get some opportunity at defensive end as well. Maybe. There could be a world in which your top four at defensive end is just Gary, LVN, and Igbari and Brenton Cox again. And Sorrell and Oliver serve as kind of more redshirt players or are inactive on game day. That could happen. You could end up with a world which Golden is like your number four or five wide receiver. Belton's not playing. Savion Williams isn't playing. Baron Sorrell and Colin Oliver are your fifth and sixth defensive ends. Warren Brinson is your fifth defensive tackle, or even maybe sixth, depending on the situation. Micah Robinson is your fifth or sixth corner, and John Williams is like your 10th offensive lineman. If they get that type of impact from this rookie class, and like even if you look at like what's the upside, right? You're probably looking at Belton and Williams for sure, at least taking a good chunk of the season to get integrated with this team. Maybe Sorrell or Oliver, you know, again, probably as like a rotational piece, maybe even a little bit, but they're probably looking at like 10, 12 snaps per game. Brinson, maybe 10, 12 snaps per game. Robinson and Williams not playing. This could come down to Golden and like maybe one of those defensive linemen that are kind of providing some impact for you this year. The extreme upside is Golden's a stud. You know, Belton gets in at some point, looks great. Williams gets some playing time. Maybe he's the kick returner. Either Sorrell or Oliver look great at defensive end. Brinson's a really solid rotational piece, kind of fills in for Slayton, and you feel good about it, right? But there could easily be a world in which you just don't get the impact from the rookie class. And while that maybe not wouldn't be something that would necessarily set them back from this past year, it would certainly be a massive disappointment. And if you don't get, I'm not going to say anything, but very little from that class, it's going to be tough to take any step in a positive direction because these could easily make up, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 7 at least of the 53-man roster, maybe 8 of the 53-man roster. So they're going to need some sort of impact there, and especially from Matthew Golden, I think, if they want to probably not stagnate and probably, again, maybe not even take a step backwards. And then last but not least, if Jordan Love is just fine slash good, but doesn't take that step to greatness, it doesn't necessarily mean that there was this ridiculous step back, because Jordan Love in 2024 was good, and I maybe wouldn't quite elevate him to greatness. It really depends. Again, listen to the Warren Sharp episode if you want some really positive things on Jordan Love, which I tend to lean a little bit more in that direction, but I'm also realistic. I think there were some ups and downs from Jordan in 2024. If that's just kind of the Jordan, you can have another, you know, same season as maybe you had last year, but it just gets tougher. It just gets harder and harder if you don't have a quarterback that elevates, meaning elevates the rest of the team. I don't think they can have another, you know, 11-6 type season if Jordan is just that quarterback. And I want to be very clear. I don't think that quarterback is bad. And I'm saying he's good. Like, that's a good starting quarterback in the NFL. But just having a good, solid starter in the NFL, it's just going to leave you a little bit in that middle ground where you really kind of don't want to be. As I talked about yesterday, if he's a good quarterback but gets hot at the right time, that could potentially elevate it. But you're usually left wanting a little bit more. And it's tough to exist in kind of that middle ground of NFL quarterbacking and just be consistently a playoff team. It's just really difficult. Or even if you are, to get any sort of traction come playoff time. So they need, I think, that step, and they need that proof that Jordan is in fact a great quarterback. For the record, I believe that's coming in 2025. I believe everyone as a Packers fan and in the league is going to know that Jordan's a great quarterback. That's what I expect from Jordan this upcoming year. But if it's the opposite, if he just is like, yeah, he's fine, he's good, he's a good quarterback. I'm not disappointed he's the quarterback of the team, but yeah, they're probably going to be, you know, some questions as to like what the long-term upside is in regards to the team when he's the quarterback. That changes the calculus quite a bit for this team in my estimation. So those are the 12 that could show signs of regression and or make it so that this team does not make the playoffs and takes a step back in 2025. Number one, regression or stagnation from their roster for a second consecutive season, the strength of schedule, the fact that they have not been able to beat good teams as of late. If that continues, Jeff Hafley just runs out of smoke and runs out of mirrors, and just the talent isn't good enough on defense. The run defense sees a regression with maybe not as much focus and no TJ Slayton. Still too much youth and inexperience, a pedestrian pass defense, a classic season from the Packers special teams, lack of attention to detail for the wide receivers and the Packers offense, too many key injuries, lack of impact from the rookie class, and Jordan Love ends up good, but not great. You see those things, and it's not going to be the season that we want from Green Bay. So yesterday's checklist is the good news checklist. If we're checking a lot of those boxes, Green Bay's probably having a great year. Green Bay checks a lot of these boxes, probably picking in the top 15 of the 2026 NFL draft, which is not where anybody wants this team to be, barring a big trade up in the draft in 2026. That's going to do it for me today. I always appreciate you guys being here. I'll see you all very soon. And again, for tomorrow's episode, shout out to Most State of Minnesota and PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Dylan Patscott, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Carlo Delgado, Willie Winkelstinkle, Jen Wright, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, and Griff Henblee. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack out.